हरि ओम सहनावतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, page 28, verse 116. Sense's heart always burns in the fire of love for Krishna. Those garlands, fine garments, and sandalwood pulp attract him no more than they would attract a man afflicted by the fire of hunger. What is that in relation to? Oh, I see. Okay, meaning that the... 15. The king achieved all this opulence by Krishna's mercy and has offered it all to Krishna. It never had any power to please him. Since his heart always burns in the fire of love for Krishna, those garlands, fine garments, and sandalwood pulp attract him no more than they would attract a man afflicted by the fire of hunger. The slightest touch of pure prema, love for Krishna, destroys all faults in a devotee. It satisfies the devotee so completely that nothing inferior can divert his attention. To outsiders, the effects of prema may seem painful. The devotee seems to burn in torment while separated from the Lord. And even while enjoying the Lord's company, he burns in apprehension of separation to come. But in fact, viraha bhava, devotional service in separation, is the highest essence of loving ecstasy. Because if the person not being there doesn't mean anything, then what's the point? Right? It should be that there's a meaning to this. Right? There's some, so it has some value.
Smoke.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. I thought this musical chair. Cause he sits there. He went over there. So he's... Okay. The intimate devotees of Krishna and Sri Vrindavan constantly experience viraha bhava, as Sukadev Goswami says in describing the fall season in Vrindavan. Except for the gopis, whose hearts had been stolen by Krishna, the people could forget their suffering by embracing the wind from the flower-filled forest. This wind was neither hot nor cold, right? Because hot wind is not nice. And if it's cold, then it also has an effect. So when it's just pleasant, then that's like... Srimad Bhagavatam 10.20, 45. The gopis of Vrindavan were so intensely absorbed in viraha bhava that the cool breezes of autumn only increased the burning in their hearts. So these contradictory aspects come up. Because this was the time of year when the fever of their hankering to be with Krishna reached its peak. Hanuman cites the analogy of a man suffering from hunger. The fire of extreme hunger dries up all the elements of his body, so that he can no longer enjoy the pleasure of clothes or other objects of enjoyment, or even the association of family and friends. Possessing worldly things merely adds to his frustration. Only when his hunger is removed will he be relieved of anxiety. Similarly, the gopis can be satisfied only by the company of Krishna. Yudhishthira Maharaj, along with the gopis, is highlighted in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 2.4, 107 and 1.111, no, excuse me, 111, as an example of the ecstatic symptoms known as jadyam, indecisiveness. Absence of the ability to decide anything which arises from hearing or seeing desirable or undesirable things, or which arises from separation, is called jhadyam. This occurs previous to and following moha, in operative mind. In this state, blinking of the eyes, silence, and forgetfulness occur. From seeing the object of desire, from the 10th canto, King Yudhishthira respectfully brought Lord Govinda, the supreme god of gods, to his personal quarters. The king was so overcome with joy that he could not remember all the rituals of worship. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:71-40.
I get this all the time.
Yes. Especially the blinking of the eyes in silence.
Okay. Right. Sometimes we see devotees serving Maharajas or something, they get nervous to the point where they actually are not really able to remember the rituals and, I mean, the proper way of doing things.
So you're saying the inoperative element of the mind is common amongst the brahmacharis.
I wanted to hear what you think.
Well, here, moha can also have, means we're talking about ecstatic symptoms here.
Yes, exactly.
So this moha, the inoperative mind, is due to ecstatic symptoms.
Maybe not all.
There's the other moha that may not be due to ecstatic symptoms. Yeah. It's just downright ignorance. See, is that one has a concept of what he can do. Because he just takes it for granted, I could do that. But when you put into a situation where you actually have to be aware of what's happening, right, then you might notice that there's a difference between what the reality and what you think is the reality. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, because otherwise, then you just go through, and if you made mistakes, you just think no big deal. But if there's a situation where it may be a big deal, then you start to notice that difference. So it's not necessarily that it gets worse, it's just you're made aware of what's actually the situation. Because if one then practices for some time, then one becomes, one doesn't have those problems. Right? Because in the mind it's easy. Yeah, you go in there, you do this, you do that, you know, it's just like cooking. Yeah, you just take the pot, throw some things in it, stir them around a bit, you know, like that, wait a few minutes, and hurry ball. You know? Yeah. But it's a bit more detail than that. Or, yeah, you just get in the car and push the pedals and move the steering wheel and go down the road and like that, you know. So just, then you start to be aware that what you know and what is required are slightly different.
There was one story of a brahmachari at the manor who was, Radhanath Swami was coming, and he was just begging to serve him, like really being a nuisance. He wasn't initiated or anything. So then, okay, he was so fired up, you know, so they let him just serve lunch. It was lunch, temple president was there, Radhanath Swami, someone else. And when it came down to it, suddenly he just freaked out and he started to like basically shake and was kind of like serving like this.
That is a technique, then you only get the right amount.
Yeah, I don't think he saw it like that at that
point. Yeah. Because it's thought, I just serve, so what can I do? Okay, serve Bashad. But as we've discussed before, serving Bashad is very technical. Yeah. People who are very focused, aware, they can do it.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, in the Gaudiya tradition, uninitiated devotees never serve Bashad. They just don't. First initiated devotees could serve to the uninitiated, but only second initiated can serve to the second initiated devotees. It's just because by that, only because it's not that it's exclusive, it's just by that time in rendering service, then you would have become aware enough to appreciate the environment that you could then learn. But that still is then with training. Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know, so that means then you would have, from when you joined until you got second initiated, you would have been always served by second initiated devotees, so you would then be aware of what proper service is. Then when you go to do it, people make you then more aware of the detail, And then within a short time you learn, and then you're good at it. You know what I'm saying? But something like that, there's a good chance that that brahmachari, even though very enthusiastic, has never actually either been served properly or, you know, has served. So if he was, you know, if he was from a Indian background, that's another thing. Then he would have, you know, served at a million weddings and all that stuff and stuff like that. So you know these things. But but short of that, then it's just not done, you know?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. So that's not the an ecstatic symptom, because there's fear. Right? Here there's love. There's fear. So fear means that there's a disconnection between yourself and the Lord there.
Yeah.
So you don't have an identity, so you can't function.
Is it a social thing? Social position thing, or
could be anything. But, you know, whatever is the basis of the fear that somebody's going to throw a pot at you or toss you out the window or ban you from the temple for the next 27 years.
Yes.
You know, whatever. Yudhishthira Maharaj is also mentioned as one of the prime examples of a plentiful giver. Of the many kinds of charity, he is giver in affection. What is given to the Lord as an affectionate friend is called Prita Dana. After completing all the ceremonial functions at the Rajasuya sacrifice, Yudhishthira desired to give Krishna sandalwood, a Vaijayanti garland, ornaments with the best rubies and gold, elephants, chariots, and horses decked in gold, his family and himself. Not seeing anything else worthy of giving, he became afflicted. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 4.3.36. In addition, Yudhishthira Maharaj is used to illustrate the point of how realization of Krishna's sweetness covers up realization of his powers. Yudhishthira Maharaj is a Vatsala Bhakta, so for him to give protection to Krishna is natural. Lack of awareness of Krishna's powers, which causes shoka rati, directed towards Krishna, is not created by ignorance. However, by the special rasa of heightened prema, this lack of awareness of his powers takes place. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 4.4.1.15. Sri Jiva Goswami comments, this realization of sweetness is a most excellent taste or rasa attained through a special type of prema produced from a sadhana possessing such sweetness of emotions. Therefore, the covering of awareness of the Lord's power by realization of his sweetness is actually the highest type of knowledge. And turning against that sweetness through realization of Brahman is real ignorance. With that ignorance, how can one attain realization of the sweetness? Yudhishthira says, Maharaj Yudhishthira, although no one's enemy, engaged four divisions of defense, horse, elephant, chariot, and army, to accompany Lord Krishna, the enemy of the asuras, demons. The Maharaj did this because of the enemy and also out of affection for the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.10.32. However, Yudhishthira is also said to be in Dasyaras. This is not opposed to this Vatsala mood. Then, moreover, since in persons such as Yudhishthira, inimical rasas such as Dasya and Vatsalya manifest at two different times, there is no fault. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu 4.8.81. Jiva Goswami comments, though there are combinations of inimical bhavas in Yudhishthira and others, such combinations are acceptable because they appear at different times. In Yudhishthira, there is seen a combination of Dasya, Vatsalya, and Shakya rasas. He has Dasya towards Krishna from knowledge that he is his Lord. He has Vatsalya rasa towards Krishna because he identifies himself as Krishna's elder. He has Shakya rasa towards Krishna because he is not much older. This is similar to Balaram, who has Vatsalya? Both are the same. It's just, okay. Vatsala and Sakya relationships with Krishna. There is fault if the rasas are unsuitable to the particular condition. However, in this case, there is no fault. In other suitable cases, there will in other unsuitable cases there will be fault. Those combinations which appear contradictory to the Bhagavatam are resolved in the Bhagavat Sandarbha and Priti Sandarbha. Durgama, Sangamani, Tika 4881. Right, so you may have these different flavors, but because they're happening at different times, then there's no problem. Right, one time they'll have this mood, another time that mood. It just depends on the situation. If they're happening at once, then it's a problem. Then you get rasa-vas. But in this case, so we see he has all these three depending on the situation. Like if he's with his brothers and they're just there sitting, then there'll be that friendship. He's thinking, considering about Krishna and that, taking care. You know, there's a situation for that, then he'll have that mood. When he's thinking of Krishna as the Lord, then there'll be that flavor. So then.
Yes. Maharaj, when there is rasa basa, this indicates that the devotee doesn't have really the point of the relationship.
It means that it hasn't, something hasn't become fixed yet. Means ideally one should avoid that. One should try to stay away from that. That's why then Rupa Goswami gives one whole ocean is just, you know, dealing with these things. So you just want to make sure is that it's properly balanced. That's why we follow in the footsteps. We don't make up our own stuff. Otherwise, we're really going to come up with some weak. So then, 117. Just see, his superlative queen is none other than Srimati Draupadi, and his brothers are such men as the blessed Bhimasena and Arjuna. It is true that Yudhishthira was very much attached to his brothers and wife, but that attachment was not material. It is based not on identification with material bodies, but on the pure spiritual identities of him and his family as eternal servants of Krishna. Srimati Draupadi was the most excellent queen any emperor could have, and she was empowered with the beauty and other transcendental qualities of Lord Vishnu's consort, Lakshmi Devi. But Yudhishthira's affection for her was not due to being attracted by these qualities. He was completely immune to such attraction. Right? So it's just like Krishna. He's with his queens, which are going to be more beautiful again. But it's not because of their beauty in that that he's attracted to them. It's because of their affection. Right? Because that service rendered, that's the attractive element on the devotional platform. These other things are just natural because devotees naturally have all opulences that match their service. Right? So therefore, then they will be the most beautiful, the most qualified in all these things. That's just natural. But that's not the actual point of attraction. It's the personality that is engaged in the Lord's service. So it's the devotional mood of the individual. Does that make sense? So that's the point. So him being on this transcendental platform, it's the same. So in other words, as a king, to perform the duties of a king to please Krishna, therefore you must have a wife. Right? So then you can't get a better wife for being an emperor than Draupadi. So it all works very, very nicely.
So Yudhishthira is attached to them. Yudhishthira is attached to them because they're doing service.
Because they're devotees.
Or because they're doing service with him.
No, they're just they're devotees. But because they happen to work together, they naturally get attached.
Get stronger.
Yeah, but if they weren't working with each other, then whenever they bumped into each other, they'd appreciate it. But it's natural, whoever you work with, then the relationship develops. So therefore, a relationship based on service is always going to be the strongest.
Yes.
Because that always goes on. Other things, then, they have a beginning and an end. Because service never... means a relationship of service that you develop with somebody here, then when you go back to Godhead, that relationship of service is still there. Now, what your particular position is, that may change.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Because generally, see, if in Vaikuntha, then one goes from husband and wife from here, go to Vaikuntha as husband and wife. That's pretty standard.
Yeah.
But for when you're going to Braj, that's not standard at all. Right? Because, you know, depending on what your rasa is, then that's not necessarily going to work out.
That was what got John Lennon and Yoko Ono.
They weren't going to go together.
No, Yoko Ono, she wanted them to go together, and Prabhupada said, you can't guarantee that, and so she wasn't having it. So, John, who chose badly.
It happens. Yeah, but they'll be there together, but they don't want to be husband and wife. Because why would you want to? What's the point of husband and wife? You don't see them together doing things, really. Mm. Right? Mother Yashoda is with the cowherd women, and they like this, or the Mandababas with the cowherd men. The gopis definitely don't want to be with the husbands. The cowherd boys, their service is out in the field with Krishna, not at home with their wives. You know what I'm saying? So maybe if there's servants in the house, but generally because the man serve and women serve, we have different services in different places of the house, they wouldn't be functioning together. So only in Vaikuntha, then there would be that aspect of they would do things together.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Parrots, peacocks, like that, those you could do all your service together.
Yeah.
Trees and creepers, they go together. But only on that platform. Everywhere else it wouldn't work out, so it wouldn't be something you'd want anyway. Is that it? Yudhishthira's brothers and wife also offered him valuable assistance in fulfilling his responsibilities for Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. These four material aims of life, however, were also powerless to distract him from his attachment to Sri Krishna's lotus feet. He cherished his connection with Bhima, his other brothers and Draupadi, only because they had pure devotion for Krishna. Anything or anyone associated with Krishna is... That's the thing, is these things come out in the Bhagavatam and the Acharyas bring out. But in Mahabharata, you wouldn't necessarily catch this. Right? Knowing this, then you can see it as it's described. But you wouldn't necessarily, from the descriptions, catch that this is the depth of his affection. Anything or anyone associated with Krishna is dear to a pure devotee, pure Vaishnava. So when Vaishnavas come together and either cause... casual or lifetime relationships, they naturally develop love for one another. They relish great pleasure tasting together the rasas of Krishna consciousness. Their spiritual assets expand as each devotee's good qualities magnify those of his or her spiritual companions. In the family of the Pandavas, the wife and younger brothers especially benefited from following the lead of Yudhishthira. 118. They are dear to him not because of bodily ties or because they help him reach the four goals of material life, but because of their loving bond with the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. But what can a forest monkey like me say about the Pandavas? Your lordship already knows much more than I about their glories. Right, so this is just his humility. It's one way he just... Yeah. Hanuman is not the subhuman creature he presents himself to be. He speaks in this way only from deep humility. By calling Narada Bhagavan, the best of spiritual masters, virtually equal to God, he acknowledges that Narada already knows very well the greatness of the Pandavas. So Hanuman suggests that Narada, rather than spend more time listening to him, should at once proceed to the kingdom of the Kurus. Thus ends the fourth chapter of part one of Srila Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, entitled Bhakta, the Devotee. Okay, part five. Chapter 5, Priya, the Beloved. In this chapter, the Pandavas refute Narada's glorification of them by instead glorifying the Yadus, especially Uttara, because they will have a relationship with Krishna, and, you know, they function in that. That's natural. But they will appreciate the relationship that the Yadus and Uddhava have, because he stays there in Dwarka. So naturally, even though it's mentioned before, he'll leave Dwarka to go stay with them just because he wants to. But they'll look at it, no, but he's from there. He identified their family, you know, like this. So it's natural. Yeah, so he will naturally see, they will naturally see him or them as greater devotees. Right? The Pandavas greet Narada, 1-5. Sri Parikit said, Sri Narada, beside himself with joy, arrived dancing at the kingdom of the Kurus and raced into their capital city. Dharmaraj Yudhishthira was just then consulting his inner circle about how to see Krishna by bringing him on the pretext of some sacrifice or calamity. When the king heard that the great sage was at the door, he at once stood up with his brothers, mother, and wives. But, well, that was efficient. Right, because they were just making the plan, and just that worked.
Yeah.
This verse is the Brihad Bhagavatam Rita's personal introduction to the Pandavas. The activity the Pandavas are engaged in upon Narada's arrival is significant for a few reasons. Firstly, this verse is noteworthy because of the nature of the Pandavas' present activity. Sri Narad Muni's meetings with all the previous Vaishnavas were characterized by either deity worship, kirtan, or meditation. In contrast, Narad Muni interrupts the Pandavas in court during an inner council meeting. Thus, to the uninformed, it may appear that the Pandavas are engaged in more secondary forms of devotional service. Right, because up to now we see that they're all, the Brahman was doing worship, the king was doing worship, Indra, you know, like this, Brahma, then especially Lord Shiva, Hanuman, right? And but here they're just sitting in court.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It may appear that the Pandavas are engaged in more secondary forms of devotional service, their social obligations as Grihastha Kshatriyas, rather than more direct means of worship such as Pancharatrika or Bhagavad Dharma. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur clarifies this misconception in a Srimad Bhagavatam purport, where he exalts the mood of the devotee as primary over other considerations. He explores this theme in relation to the Brajavasis, but the conclusion is equally applicable to the Pandavas. My dear Lord Krishna, until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves. Their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate feelings for their family members remain foot shackles. Srimad Bhagavatam 10:14-36.
Yeah.
That's always fun, how they paint such a bleak picture. The sannyasis, okay, this is from, okay, so this is the purport. He just gave this quote, and now this is the purport. The sannyasis will object that the inhabitants of Braja are fallen in the net of material life in the form of attachments to sons and wife. However, what to speak of the householders of Braja, even your ordinary devotees in other places are superior to the sannyasis. Attachment and aversion are great thieves because they steal the great treasure of bliss from the soul. The souls are bound up in the prison of household life, so they cannot criticize the Supreme Lord after having lost their wealth. As long as people do not get the mercy of your devotees and become your followers, they remain in this position. When they become your devotees, they develop attachment for bhakti and aversion to things obstructing bhakti. They become absorbed in you. These thieves, attraction and repulsion, expecting to grasp the great treasure, unlimited knowledge and bliss, when they become fixed in you, give up their bad qualities and instead do good service to others. Right. The house, which was a prison by performance of pious and impious activities, binding them up, becomes a means of attaining eternal dharma. through activities of serving you and singing your glories. When the jiva becomes the devotee of Krishna, then the bewilderment, moha, from objects, formerly wife and sons, becomes causes of the expression, anubhavas, of praying. So it appears here there's two kinds of moha.
Yes.
Yes.
Case in point.
So before prema and after prema. Yes.
Okay. This brahmacharya was before prema.
Before prema, I think okay. So. How can the sannyasis compare to this? Right. So the point being is that the sannyas, what's the point of the sannyas, right? The sannyas as an order is there so that at least some point in the life you function in a way where you're trying to be not connected to the material world, right? That's the whole point of it. Is ideally, as Krishna mentions in Gita, is that attitude of sannyas where everything you do is for Krishna is there throughout the life. Yes. But if it's not, at least it should be there at the end of life, right? Because at the end of life, you can't really do much else anyway. So you can't complain.
Other options.
Yes, right. Is that what it says? So therefore, in this case, he's just comparing it in the grihastha. Therefore, a grihastha devotee is better situated than a non-devotee sannyasi. Because a non-devotee sannyasi maximum can get liberation from his endeavor. But the grihastha devotee is already situated on the path of going back to the spiritual realm, if not already there. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that when you add devotional service into the equation, it takes on a very different kind of flavor.
So devotee is a sannyasi.
So devotee is, that's how much they realize of this sannyasi, because in the beginning, the tendency is for renunciation, not sannyas. And then that is also depending upon how often and how great that is. But with practice and time, one naturally comes to that position of sannyas. Technically, the Madhyama platform is that platform of sannyas, because that's nice karma. Right? The neophyte position, then there's a tendency towards the karma misra bhakti. Right? But it would be Nishkam Karma Yoga would be the Madhyama platform.
Yes.
So whatever one's varna or ashram, then one would be have already attained the perfection of sannyas, because if you're going to give up the material world, what's the purpose? Right? Just to give it up and then go to Brahman and then come back again, what's the point? But to give it up and then take up service to the Lord, go back to Godhead, now that's a value. That has meaning. Right? So that's the real position. That's why then it's pointed out here is that here you have their grihasthas and their kshatriyas. And the time when Narada Muni comes, they're sitting in court discussing, you know, court business. Of course, their court business is how to get what kind of intrigue can they do to get Krishna to come visit them.
Good topic.
You know, so yes, that very political.
Yes. Yes.
So that's the perfection. They're using politics in Krishna's service.
Yeah. You know.
So, but if one is simply looking at the externals, then one would think that how is this that they're such senior devotees? Right? But if one understands the devotional process, then it's because they're beyond this. You have to do something. Right?
Yes.
You have to do something. So this is what they're doing. Yes.
And it seems they are eternally doing that thing?
Yes. Yes. Because they're not sadhakas. That's the thing. This is their devotional position. It's probably mentions Arjuna is always an assistant of Krishna in his pastimes in the material world. Like that. So therefore, that they're always there doing that. So it's part of the pastimes. So.
Yeah. But the question is, is a comparison between a devotee in the West, just an example,
in the West, how far west?
Yeah, let's think of the body.
It's like Burma is as far west as you can get.
I say in some place in Europe.
Okay, not too far west.
So he initiated the body, let's say for instance, but he's not very serious. He goes to the temple maybe on Sundays, and he's not very, very serious, but still some fades there. Mm-hmm. And from the other hand, we have a Dambasi who is somehow doing some service.
You put an H in there, right?
So we have a Dambasi who is coming to do some service here, but he doesn't have any regulation. But he's going to spend his whole life somehow connected with service and here in the Holy Land. He's going to leave his body here. I just wonder who is better situated.
Did you keep yourself up at night thinking this up?
No.
It just spontaneously popped into your mind right now.
No, it came out before, but it just. I never get to answer that question. I never get to.
And what do you call better situated?
Better destination. Who's going to get a better destination in the next life?
Better destination. And what do you call a good destination?
Like going to get at least getting a. Or maybe not to.
Are you sure this question is important? It means it should have all the different parts, then it has some meaning. You know what I'm saying? You know, this sounds like the kind of question, you know, when you got two guys driving in the car and they got nothing better to do. So, what you rather do, you know, how you say, ride on a crocodile backwards or be run over by a herd of wild pigs, you know.
Who would win in a fight? Huh? The chimpanzee or the robot?
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's a standard kind of...
What if?
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because the thing is unless you have a Dambasi like that, and you have another one like this, then the point is why is he a Dambasi? You know what I'm saying? Because of service rendered before. So the Dambasis are in their own category. So therefore, you don't really compare them. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like, okay, you have two devotees, like you mentioned in the first one in the West, and they are both attending the temple the same amount of irregularity and not that much serious. Now, one's living in New York and one's living in, you know, Tallahassee. Okay, so then in that case, you could ask her which is better situated. It would have some relevance.
Right? Easier.
Yes.
So completely different category, like apples, compare apples with pears.
Yeah, you just don't. They're in their own category, so you don't try to work out the, like that.
Which is good.
Yes.
Which is good. Because they're impossible to understand.
No, that's why you don't bother. That was Lord Chaitanya to Sanatana Goswami, because Sanatana Goswami is the one who establishes all these relationships and that. And he says, don't worry about it. They have their own programs. You don't follow them. You don't take up doing what they're doing. You don't criticize what they're doing. It's just they're in their own category. You meet them. You're pleasant. You're nice. You interact, but you don't get too close with them because they're just in another category. So things that they do, if you did, there'd be trouble. So just don't worry about it. Yeah. Then on another note, I'm just wondering how you define exactly a dumb boss.
Dumb station.
Dumb station. Oh,
okay. Yes. Okay. So that end so of that end of Calcutta. Okay.
That'll be a dumb Dambasi.
The holy dumb.
Yeah, it's the holy dumb. Okay. My son Sanat Kumara said the following to show the inferiority of such people and superiority of the devotee. Right. So you can take this as quite solid because he is a sannyasi. Right? The ocean of nescience is very difficult to cross because it is infested with many dangerous sharks. Although those who are non-devotees undergo severe austerities and penances to cross that ocean, we recommend that you simply take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are like boats for crossing the ocean. Although the ocean is difficult to cross, by taking shelter of his lotus feet, you will overcome all dangers. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:22-40. Right, so they're trying to cross that ocean basically by swimming, right?
That's not good.
Yes. And the inhabitants of Braja have even thousands of times more greater prema than these Grihastha devotees. Though you are the Purna Brahma, you show yourself as dependent upon these devotees by taking the form of their son. Sardartha Darshani 10:14-36. Right. So he's basically just pointing out is that that you just have your sadhaka, a grahastha devotee as a sadhaka is in a great, better situated than a nicely practicing sannyasi who's, what is it, undergo severe austerities and penances to cross that ocean. Means they're trying to get out of the material world. So a grahastha devotee is better situated than that. So let alone then the inhabitants of the spiritual world who are on the platform of prema. So that's thousands of times greater than that. Right? Yeah. So therefore the position of the on the material platform of sannyasa is not very great. Right? We'll make it great because, you know, we want whatever we do to be great. You know. So whatever position you're in, you're a brahmachari, everybody else like this, you're grihastha, the brahmachari is like that. You're sannyasa, everybody else, you know, so that's
everybody else.
Yeah, so that, you know. So that's the whole thing is that we do that for our own prestige. But in reality, it's only so that one can, according to one's nature, situate oneself so that one can be engaged in service to the world. Right? That's the only point. There is no other point. Hence, it is shown that setting aside one's duties in order to focus on spiritual activities is in a fact a material consideration. Is in fact, or is a fact, is in fact material, or is in fact a material?
Is a fact in material considerations.
Okay. So you're saying that should give up his position as a AA member, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, he's saying. Okay. And wholly inapplicable to the Pandavas, devotion is superior to renunciation. Right? Because the point of renunciation is to give it up for Krishna.
Yes.
So if you just give something up and don't give it to Krishna, it's just like I have some money. And I just take it and toss it out the window or something. Okay, you could say he's renounced. But better is that he would have given it in charity. Someone would have got benefits. So point is you renounce and give that to Krishna, that's way better than just renouncing it. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Just, yeah. Okay. The Pandavas are far beyond the platform of sadhana bhakti. All their actions are done out of pure Krishna prema, so they don't have to perform sadhana to gain that perfection. They're already on that perfectional platform. They are indeed engaged in the highest possible dharma, Krishna bhakti, thereby transcending the devotion of any other devotees encountered thus far. This highlights the next notable aspect of Srinard's encounter with the Pandavas. Right? So, the highest dharma is Krishna bhakti. Therefore, the lower dharma or the varnashram aspects are just serving the Lord in that way. Just like time and space serve the Lord, so also varnashram serves the Lord. So all these different considerations are only serving the Lord. Right? So the Pandavas then are functioning on that platform. So one shouldn't be bewildered that they're using these tools in Krishna's service. You know what I'm saying? Like that. So, just like you go into a kitchen, you see a gross materialist using a pot and a spoon to cook. So you shouldn't be surprised when you walk into the house of the devotee and see them using a pot and a spoon to cook.
That's material.
Yes, that's the problem. Yeah. Okay. It should be noted that Yudhishthira Maharaj is not the first king encountered so far in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The topic of Yukta Vairagya was also dealt with back in the first chapter, in the case of the southern king. The theme of devotional service's superiority to renunciation was explored then. Moreover, the king was witnessed as living in peace. We were not privy to any strife befalling him. Hence, an aspect of the Pandavas' uniqueness is that they were not content with mere freedom from suffering. In fact, they now welcome suffering if it meant greater association with the Lord, Sri Krishna. Right? So they said, we can come up with a calamity, then Krishna will come.
Yes.
So for them, getting Krishna's association was more important than peace.
Yes.
Right? Right? So it gets like a sticker, give calamity a chance.
And we're campaigning for world suffering.
Can you donate it?
That's, yeah, probably wouldn't go very far in a beauty pageant, would it? Thus, the context of the Pandavas' courtly discussion is the second significant feature of this verse.
Content. Hmm? Content. Content.
Oh. Okay. There were no ordinary political topics. They revolved around the Pandavas' intense feelings of separation from the Lord. Narad Muni arrived in court just as the Pandavas were conspiring to induce Krishna to return to Hastinapur. Having triumphed over Duryodhana's army at Kurukshetra, Yudhishthira and the Pandavas now enjoyed a respite from conflict and calamity. This came at a cost, however. To their chagrin, this meant that they were now bereft of Krishna's association. In order to gain it, they planned to send Bhima or someone else to invite Krishna to an Ashwamedha sacrifice. But the assembly thought this wouldn't make Krishna come soon enough, because sacrifices take a long time to arrange. Like an Ashwamedha, basically, these ones, they take like 9 months to arrange. And then after that, then you go. You know, it works. Yeah. So they're slow. It's not that you can hurry it up, because you have to do everything at certain auspicious times.
Yeah.
So in this month you do these ones, that month you do those ones, and so by the end of the time you have everything arranged and everything's, then you can start.
Yeah.
So that's why you can't make it quicker. You can do an Ashwamedha Yagya in a year. You know, so that's why I said, if in 100 years you do 100 Ashwamedha Yagyas, then, you know, they didn't say, you know, in 6 months you did 100 Ashwamedha Yagyas. No, it's just, it doesn't work like that.
What does chagrin mean?
Chagrin.
You can ask our friend, Devarishi.
No, chagrin.
Yes,
chagrin. It's like some type of sorrow.
Some kind of sorrow. Okay.
That feeling wasn't good.
Hmm?
I had a feeling from the context that wasn't good.
Yes, no. Yeah. Yeah. A second proposal was to ask Krishna to help defend Hastinapur from enemy attack. Even though there was no need for another sacrifice and no threat of attack on the city, the Pandavas were scheming to get Krishna's association by whatever means. Right, so that's the thing. So they're scheming to get his association.
How to run a kingdom.
Yeah. In general, the Supreme Lord's devotees encounter two kinds of danger. One created by the Lord to proclaim the devotees' glories. The other simulated by the Lord's devotees when they are intensely anxious to see him. Okay, text 4. As Yudhishthira eagerly rushed forward to meet him, Narada came close and bowed down. Yudhishthira brought him into the assembly hall and with some effort made him accept a seat of honor. As others had done before, dear mother, the king brought a large assortment of items for worshipping Narada. But Narada took those items and instead worshipped your fathers-in-law and their servants. Although other devotees, like Prahlad, had also tried to worship Narada. Yudhishthira had the means to offer the opulence of royal worship. But as soon as Yudhishthira began the worship, Narada stopped him, seized the items, and used them to worship the entire Pandava household, including the servants. Parikshit Maharaj's mother, being a close relative of the Pandavas, could feel special pride in hearing this account. Narada praises Krishna and the Pandavas, 6 through 64. Okay, so the praise goes on a little longer this time.
Solid.
This section is significant, for Narada Muni begins by praising the Pandavas indirectly by praising their master Krishna. So far in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Narada Muni and the other devotees have reserved their praise for the devotees of the Lord. The Lord himself has mostly remained in the background. This section thus stresses the uniqueness and completeness of Krishna. Because now once you get to this point, then Krishna is involved. Up to here, it may have been any in particular Vishnu deity.
Yes.
But because now you're dealing now with Goloka, so therefore, then you're dealing now with Krishna.
Yes.
6. Narada chanted at length the glories of the precious treasure of which Hanuman had spoken, Krishna's favor on the Pandavas. Narada accompanied his words by playing his veena. Sri Narada said, "You are indeed the most fortunate persons on earth. The Lord of all the lords of the universe is your dearest friend. He is your God, your spiritual master, your blood relation, your material cousin, or maternal cousin. He is your messenger, well-wisher, order carrier, and charioteer." So you see, all the relationships with Krishna are also in a wide range. Right, so therefore it's natural that the Pandavas will have that wide range. Or you could say, because the Pandavas have that wide range, Krishna naturally reciprocates with that wide range. Text 7 through 44 tell of Krishna's special grace on the Pandavas. Narada begins in this verse by indicating the various ways the Pandavas enjoyed a personal association with Krishna. Because of these manifold relationships with Krishna, the Pandavas should be considered the most fortunate Vaishnavas on earth. This world of human beings is actually the most suitable place to cultivate pure devotion for Krishna. On higher planets like Svarga Loka, greater power and sense gratification are easily to be had. But such material resources, although attractive to conditioned souls, are obstacles to renunciation and pure devotion. The Pandavas are fortunate, therefore, to be with Krishna in his descent upon earth. The prime focus of the Pandavas' love and affection is Sri Krishna, the son of Devaki. The Pandavas are exceptionally fortunate because the same Krishna, who is the sole object of their love, is the supreme controller of the lords of the universe, Brahma, Rudra, and the other demigods. The Pandavas not only love Krishna as the friend, but also worship him as their eternal master and protector. Right, so this is that where you have that both aspects, so then for the connection with Dwarka and Mathura. Because that's the part majesty, part sweetness. So they also have that. He's their friend, intimate friend, relative, and that. At the same time, then he's their lord. Like that. He is their spiritual master, guiding them in all matters of life. He becomes one of their family members, specifically on their mother's side, Kunti. The Pandava's mother is the sister of Vasudeva, Krishna's father, both of them being children of King Surasena. And maternal cousins are normally affectionate to one another. Like paternal may be more formal, but maternal is more like that. King Krishna sometimes becomes the Pandava's messenger. For example, they once sent him to Hastinapur from the city of Upaplava in the kingdom of Virat to convey a message to Duryodhana's court. Krishna is also the Pandava's well-wisher, Suhrit, their unmotivated benefactor who never expects any reward for his services. And sometimes he drives Arjuna's chariot. On such occasions, Krishna obeys the Pandava's order without question. Thus, Krishna is called Upti Tantra, subordinate to the words of his pure devotees. That, like you see, is on the battlefield. What's his name? Shalya. He was considered and equal to Krishna in chariot driving, right? And so then, and Karna was considered equal to Arjuna. So it was figured that this would be a suitable match, right? But when Shalya was driving the chariot for Karna, then the difficulty came up is that Karna said, do this. But, you know, being a warrior himself, he could see that there was a better option because he knew how to drive chariots. You know, so then he was going some other way. And so Karna would get upset with this. And then he started yelling at him. So then Salya just stopped the chariot, put down the reins, and walked off. Just drive your own chariot. So we see this is like difference in Krishna's movement. Krishna's Ukti Tantra, so therefore he, whatever Arjuna says, he does that. You know, there's no argument here.
In the middle of war.
Yeah.
That's good.
This implies the other ways Hanuman had mentioned to Narada that Krishna helps the Pandavas, is standing guard for them at night, and so on. All these relationships between Krishna and the Pandavas are pervaded by intimate affection. For the Pandavas, Krishna is the eternal object of worship. But more than that, he is their eternal friend. Arjuna and his brothers also worship demigods like Lord Shiva and spiritual masters like Drona. But the Pandavas' worship of Krishna is unique because it comes forth from unalloyed devotion. Like the others, they're doing because it's the appropriate thing. Because here, Drona is the acharya when it comes to weaponry and the political field. All their duties is kshatriyas. But it's not that he's giving them spiritual direction. So what worship is due to someone who's teaching you like that, that's being done. So it's done properly, it's done sincerely, but it's not done with the affection, with prema, like Krishna's worship. Like that. Hey, for Brahma, Rudra, and other demigods, he is difficult to realize even in advanced meditation. He can be known through the words of the Vedas only when one understands their special purport. Srimad Narsingha, Sri Vamana, and Sri Raghavendra are his plenary expansions. Here Narad Muni argues that because Krishna is superior to Narsingha, Vamana, and Ramachandra, the Pandavas are consequently superior to Sri Prahlad, Bali, and Hanuman. The attraction of Krishna's expansions is but a reflection of Sri Krishna's supreme attractiveness. Right? Because there's something attractive. Anytime Krishna is there, he's attractive. Even here in the material world, just through his potencies, he's entering everything and creating attraction. Right? Yeah. So if Krishna's involved, there's always attraction.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Krishna's attraction is much greater. Moreover, Narada explains that the supremely charming transcendental person, Sri Krishna, is difficult to understand. Great demigods like Brahma and Indra may know his supremacy, theoretically, but they cannot begin to taste Krishna prema. Like they know his position, in theory, means according to knowledge, but they don't have that realization through prema. You know, that's his thing. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Here he uses the term Krishna prema. In other words, it may be on the platform of prema, but it's not specifically for Krishna. Right? Shiva worships Sankarsana. Right? That Brahma is worshipping Garbhodaksha Vishnu, which is Prajumna. Because Prajumna is the attractive feature.
Yeah.
Right? So therefore the mode of passion aspect is there. So then that's Brahma's meditation. Sankarsana is the establishment or the you know, your sat principle, which from there are the jnana principle. So therefore you'll get the aspect of ignorance will come from that. Does that make sense? So they're just naturally, yes.
This is due to lack of mercy from Krishna?
No, it's just comparing to the position. It's not that the individual themselves is not in a glorious position, because that's always there. But what is being brought out is that the position of Brahma, the position of Shiva, that's not enough to understand the position of Krishna Prema that the Pandavas are having.
Yes.
Is that makes sense?
Yes.
So that's the aspect. So it's natural their position is there because they're expansions. But here's those who are from that side. Because here Brahma and Shiva, you're talking about expansions connected with Mahavishnu. Right? But then the point is Mahavishnu is that aspect. Did you ever find that word Rupa Goswami uses? Yeah. So he uses a term that means there's that quality to be involved in the process of creation. Right? Which means then you have to use his potency, his time, and the modes of nature and all those different things. So that potency is there in Balaram, but you only see it manifest in Mahavishnu. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. But we see is that at the point of the Jnana Shakti with Vasudev, that's the point of the switch. Right? Because then you get that aspect of Yoga Maya. Right? And then her husband. So then that further expands then down here. And then you get the principle here of Sada Shiva. So it's all one principle. It's just a matter of how much potency is necessary to manifest it. Because Mahavishnu only has to manifest the potency to run the material world. Right? Then Vasudev then is on the principle of the whole cosmic creation. Right? Because his Shakti is pervading everything. So Mahavishnu will be a swamsa of him.
Yes.
Right? Is this... blank look time.
Well, it sounds very good when you explain it, and then if you ask if I could explain it, I would have to say no.
You would just have to.
I wouldn't have to. I would probably choose to say.
Okay.
It sounds great.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. So I guess a few more years.
Yeah. Just keep churning it. And
Just like stuff in the first year is like, by the fourth year is like, yeah, at least we know.
Yeah.
The name is familiar.
Shanku. Who's this Prani Rudra? Shankudev. I always get them mixed up. Yeah. Okay, so that therefore is that's on a different level because they're dealing with swamsas of Krishna, but they're dealing with Krishna himself. So then naturally the glories of that devotee, because Krishna manifests that mood to reciprocate the devotee. So if you're seeing a superior form of Krishna, means you're dealing with a superior position of devotion.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So this is the logic that he's using here. As Wilhelm, or is this as Wilhelm?
As Wilhelm.
Huh?
As well.
As well, no M.
No.
You can't work it in somewhere. As well. All Vedic texts are ultimately descriptions of Sri Krishna. Yet his attractive charm is not obvious in the literal meaning of the Vedic mantras, nor in their ritualistic explanations. One must discover the secret purport of the Vedas, which is possible only by the mercy of Krishna's pure devotees. Right? Because otherwise, if you hear the Veda, you won't catch what they're talking about.
Yes.
It's just because it's right there.
Yes.
And so within the Vedic tradition, your scholars are going to study the Upanishads.
Yes.
All these things are written in the Upanishads, because that's where all the philosophy is. Right?
Yes.
But they never catch this.
No.
So it's only by the mercy of the pure devotees who understand this, then one is able to appreciate it. So that's the position. Right. So therefore the Pandavas then are in a very
nice,
unique position. Like that. 9. All other incarnations of Godhead expand from mere portions of his plenary portions. Right? Because you're basically all the incarnations in the material world are expanding from Aniruddha. Right? Who's an expansion from Vajumna, from Shankarshan, from, and who's expanding from Mahasankarshan, who's expanding from Mahanarayan, who's expanding from Balaram. You understand? So that's generally all the incarnations that are there. That's their position. But here you're dealing with Krishna Swayam. So then he's not, there's no, in that way, comparison. Yes.
Where does Vasudeva fit in that list that you just gave?
You have Mahanarayan, right? That's the position of, you could say, a Vasudeva.
Okay.
But he expands as Mahavasudeva, Sankarshan, Pajumna, Nariruddha. And then from them expands all the other expansions. So in Vaikuntha, then from Sankarshan will expand, and then into the Vaikunthas, and then you'll get all the 24, and then from him will expand again, and the next group of 24, like that, will go on unlimited. Or you will expand down as Mahavishnu, and then who expand as Garbhadakshaya, as Giridakshaya, and then you get all the incarnations.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the
yeah.
So that term Vasudev or Mahanarayan in this case is what we're discussing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. 9. All other incarnations of Godhead expand from mere portions of his plenary portions. Great gods like Brahma are considered his material opulences. Right? Because spiritual opulences are manifest in the spiritual world. But here, because you're manifesting the material world, you're seeing his opulences through the material manifestation.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's his potency, but you appreciate it through a material form.
Yes.
Right? So then Brahma is his material opulence.
Yes.
And material nature is his maidservant. It means the material energy itself. Standing always in view, ready to serve him, she enacts the creation, protection, and destruction of the universe. Right? Because she is dealing with all three, she has all those aspects. So in the same way, it's just like when we're going through the process of creation, the primary, then we're talking about the aspects of goodness, passion, ignorance. Because then when it manifests, there's going to be goodness, passion, and ignorance. Right? And so she controls all three. Like that. So then it all works. So depending on what you're talking about, you bring out that particular one and its effect, or another one, or another one. But factually, she's controlling all of them. In this verse, in this verse, Narad Muni reinforces the supremacy of Sri Krishna by stating that the incarnations and vibhutis of the Lord have their sources in him. Right? Vibhutis meaning like what is mentioned here, Brahma, or the power of the ocean, or the nourishment of the moon, or all these different aspects. Brahma explains to Narada in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam how the demigods are material reflections of Krishna's creative powers. I myself, Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, great generators of living beings like Daksha and Prajapati, yourselves, Narada and the Kumaras, heavenly demigods like Indra and Chandra, the leaders of the Bhurloka planets, the leaders of the earthly planets, the leaders of the lower planets, the leaders of the Gandharva planets, the leaders of the Vidyadhara planets, the leaders of the Charanaloka planets, the leaders of the Yakshasas, Rakshasas and Uragas. I think Uragas means the great snakes. The great sages, the great demons, the great atheists. And so there's great atheists, not just ordinary atheists, great atheists. And the great spacemen. Yeah, that must be the Siddhas, right? Because they weren't mentioned, right? Up to now?
There's going to be a list.
Hmm? Yeah, no, I'm just saying they weren't listed before.
Yeah.
Okay, so that would mean the siddhas, because they automatically have the ability to move in space without a vehicle or anything. Yeah. So they're the great spacemen. Yes. Right? As well as the dead bodies, evil spirits, satans, jinns, kushmandas. Kushmanda. It's one of the kinds of ghosts and all that. Jinns are paisaches. Kushmandas. I'm just thinking, because I think pumpkins are also known as kushmanda. So maybe that's why they go together. On Halloween, you get pumpkins, right? You know, like that. So that's where the kushmandas hang out in the pumpkin. Great aquatics, great beasts, and great birds, etc. Footnote 1. Ah. According to Vijayadvaj Tirtha's commentary, here is a list of the respective leaders of each race. Vijayadvaj, that means in Ramanuja line or Madhu line?
I'm not sure. I think it's Madhu.
Okay.
If I do get.
Leader of the Gandharvas is Vishvavasu. Leader of the Charna is Pushpadanta. Right, because you mentioned the Sadhyas. You heard the term Sadhyas used?
Mm-hmm.
That means the lead. That means this group. The leader of a particular group. Like that. Those are the Sadhyas. So it mentions the Sadhyas were present. It means you have the demigods, but you also have the leaders of these groups. So they come, you know, all big special programs and all that, and they come. Because they're leading. You know, if all the Gandharvas showed up, it would be a problem. So the head shows up, and then it's... The leader of the Charanas is Pushpananta. Kuvera is the head of the Yakshas. Niriti is the head of the Rakshas. Rakshas? Rakshas? Rakshasas?
It's just in both places, so I think they both were.
Okay, it's also the same thing.
Yeah, when they both appeared during that pastime of Lord Brahma, one of them said Raksha, one of them said Yaksha.
Oh, okay, Raksha and Niriti. Yeah, okay, Raksha and Yaksha.
Yeah.
Eat him up and spare him not. The two options.
Yeah.
And he didn't seem to appreciate either one of them. Yeah. Okay, that's fine. Vasuki is the head of the Uragas, and Ananta is the head of the Nagas. Okay, now what's the difference between the Uragas and the Nagas? I'm not sure.
Maybe multi-headed and single-headed?
I'm not sure. Head of the sages is Vashishta. Head of the Pitris is Yama. Head of the Daityas is Prahlad. Head of the Siddhas is Sanaka. Head of the Danavas is Vrishaparva. Head of the... I think Vrishaparva. I think it's his daughter, who marries Yayati. Isn't it?
It's the sage to the demons, which was Shukra. The two.
Oh, no, that's
Yayati,
right.
Married two.
Yeah, no, he married... his daughter, and I think the other, and Devayani.
Yeah, and Sarmishta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The leader of the Paisachas is Gantakarna. The leader of the Bhutas is Bhairava. The leader of the Kushmandas is Bringi. The leader of the Aquatics is Timingila. Okay. Timingila is the one who... they eat whales for breakfast. They're that big. Not that they gnaw on them a while, they just swallow them whole, right? Head of the beast is the lion.
What's the difference between Daityas and Danavas?
Daityas are the offspring of?
Diti.
And Danavas are the offspring of, I think, Danu. Is it Danu?
Yeah.
Okay. Two of the wives of Kasyapa. Yeah. And the Adityas are the sons of Aditi. Like that. So from what I've understood is that the Daityas are a more refined demoniac group. Like that. And the Danavas are more, you know, they say...
Viking. Viking type.
Yeah, like that.
But there's Maya Danava, right? He's like a very...
Yeah, so it seems that there's... But it doesn't mean that they're not... They have a whole culture and they're not qualified.
Yeah.
It just means that... You know, it's just like Hanuman. They're Vanaras, so they're not as sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
I get the idea that the Daityas are more sophisticated, the Danavas aren't so worried about it. Mm. You know, they're a little more relaxed on there.
They don't mix together.
They do things together, mm-hmm. but it's two different families, because, you know, they're cousins, so it's not that they don't have to hang out with each other. Just somehow or another avoid their other cousins, the Adityas. Yeah, that seems to be a problem. But I think also that the Daityas are also generally in human form, but the Danavas may be all kinds of forms. Yeah, I think you get more of that kind of thing. Yeah, because Vrishaparva is head of the Danavas. So he's king. They follow the Vedic system. Sukracharya lives in his court. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's not that, you know, they follow the Vedic culture and all that. It's just, it seems that, like you said there, they got the horns and everything else. Yeah. Okay. In other words, anything and everything which is exceptionally possessed of power, opulence, mental and perceptual dexterity, strength, forgiveness, beauty, modesty, opulence, and breeding. Oja, Sahasvad, Balavat, Shamatvat, Shri Hri Vibhut Yatmavad, Adbhutarnam. Whether in form or formless may appear to be the specific truth and the form of the Lord, but actually they are not so. They are only a fragment of the transcendental potency of the Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.6, 43-45. So it appears that it's him, so it's him as a fragment of his transcendental potency. Right? That's functioning on the platform of Brahman, expanding from Brahman, or is it a manifestation of Brahman? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So therefore, is not the full. That's why Krishna says, "I am that," but at the same time, I'm separate from that. Because as a person, so what we're seeing here is all this great opulence and these things have been shown up to now. But now the Pandavas, it's about Krishna the person, rather than his opulences and the greatness of his opulences. Commenting on these verses in the second canto, Srila Sridhar Swami explains that many opulent expansions of the Supreme Person exist in this world, and each of them displays part of the Supreme Lord's potency. Some display great mahas, physical strength. Others display ojas, sensory strength. And yet others display sahas, mental power. Okay, mahas and sahas. Bala, steadfastness, Shri, beauty, Hri, avoidance of karma and entanglement. Okay, that's Hri. Vibhuti, wealth, Atma, intelligence, or Adbhuta Arna, amazing effulgence. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also comments. What more can be said? Amar Kosh says, Bhagam Shri Kama Mahatmyam Virya Yat Narka Kirtishu. Bhaga means prosperity, love, glory, potency, effort, the sun, and fame. Thus, Bhagavat means whatever possesses glory. Mahasvat means endowed with tejas or influence. Ojasvat, Sahasvat, Balavat means possessor of fitness of senses, mind, and body. Hri means disgust with sinful acts. Right, because you have Shri, you have opulence, but without Hri, then you'll use it for nonsense. Right? Yeah. Atma means intelligence. Adbhutarnam means astonishing syllable. All these things, tattvam, with form like us and the formless as well, such as time, these two types of things, though forms of the Supreme Lord, do not arise from his surup. Right? They arise from the Brahman. Right, because these things in connection to his form, then that's a whole different thing. But what we're seeing in the material world, that's arising from the qualities of his effulgence. So that's why there's a difference between this and the qualities that are perceived in his form. So that's why that is so much more attractive than whatever is here. So can seeing what's here and connecting with what's here, we're liberated from the material entanglement. But it doesn't have the taste. That's why seeing it on that level is not enough. We may see, oh, I'm connecting everything to Krishna. Yes, but it won't give the taste as dealing with the person himself. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
That is because they do not have the functions of the Surupa Shakti. Right? Because it's not working with the internal potency, they're dealing with the external potency. Though time and other factors are the effects of the Purush avatar, they are as Shaktis. Brahma and Shiva are as Gunavatars, and the Prajapatis and others are as Vibhutis. All these and the Jnanis, Yogis, Karmis, the fools, the moving and the non-moving beings, the, Dumbvasis. And non-moving beings okay. Should be understood to be the entourage for the creation, maintenance, and destruction pastimes of the Purusha avatar. Okay, so this is the entourage of the Purusha avatar, not of the Swayam Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So his original form, then that's a whole different manifestation of these opulences. Though these opulences are an expansion of his, just like the Purusha avatar is his expansion. But to run the material world only takes a small portion of his potency. So therefore, the Vibhutis and all these other opulences then are even going to be smaller than that. Right? Because Mahavishnu is the whole creation. Right? So now in just one place where we're seeing and appreciating, then how much potency is that? So it's very small.
Yes.
In this respect, Maharaj, we see in the 10th chapter of Gita, Krishna explains that among women I am fortune, fine speech, intelligence, and all these qualities. So I have read one argument that is attempting to, I guess, refute the statement that women possess less intelligence by saying, well, Krishna here in Gita says that of these qualities, these are females, so how are these consistent? How can, would that refute, that claim?
So, Benjamin, you've already done it in your statement.
Okay.
You're saying that these are female.
Uh-huh.
These are not a female.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So female means that they're female as opposed to male.
Mm-hmm.
Krishna is the male, so these are his energies. This is the female.
Mm-hmm.
So the female here is, your internal potency, or even the expansion is the external potency. And definitely we're going to admit that they're quite well situated.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And not less intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're doing everything in connection to Krishna.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some sense.
Mm-hmm.
So when that's what I was saying here is that the position of the grihastha,
mm-hmm.
then as a devotee, then is in a better position than the non-devotee sannyasi,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they're connecting everything to Krishna,
mm-hmm.
right? So as a devotee, they're connecting everything to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So then technically, that connection to Krishna, there's no difference between that whether you're a grihastha or a sannyasi. Right, so even as a devotee, it doesn't matter. It's just which position you use to serve Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Then, okay. Where? So the principle, what the Vedas are talking about here, is that the feminine nature to choose rasa over intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if that rasa is connected to Krishna, then that's a superior choice. Then there's no problem. There's no need of defining as less intelligent. But if for rasa it's material over intelligence, that's called less intelligent. Because anything that is within the material world and keeps you here, that's less intelligent. Does that make sense? So that's the meaning of less intelligent. We're not talking about IQ here, or material skill.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? It's just like this.
Yeah.
If you had, the local ruffian from around the corner on one side,
mm-hmm.
and you had the Amazon on the other, which one would you be more worried about? Right. Okay. So it's not about skill. That's not what it's meaning. It's always the chauvinistic mentality will always interpret it that way. Mm-hmm. You know?
Right.
But that's not what it means. It's talking about choosing material rasa over intelligence.
So can we connect it earlier? We were talking about attraction and repulsion. As representing, you know, the sannyasi, the repulsion on one side, and the attached grihastha, the attachment, and the devotee being beyond those.
Yes.
And so in that same way, one represents karma and gyan. So can we say that that gyan is kind of the intelligence we're talking about?
Yes, so in the material platform, gyan's higher than karma.
Yeah.
But when you get to the devotional platform, then karma's higher than gyan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, because you're engaged in the Lord's service rather than just appreciate. Therefore, means the Shantaras means you appreciate on that intellectual platform.
Mm-hmm.
But higher than that are the rasas because they're rendering service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, so what's higher there becomes lower here.
Mm-hmm.
See, why Gyan is appreciated here is because one loses interest in the material engagement. But having lost that engagement, but what are you doing then?
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't take up devotional service, that's also less intelligent.
Mm-hmm.
So the feminine nature will be, it will take up either material rasa or spiritual rasa.
Mm-hmm.
It won't take up the in-between, because what's the meaning, what's the point of that? You know, you don't get rid of one thing until you have another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, does that make sense?
It's also like Shri is Lakshmi, but Kri is like the counterpart to that.
Yeah.
But the female is the Shri, you could say.
Yeah, but also Kri is that you don't want to, it means that it's also feminine quality because
right.
The performance of religious activities, because religious activities get good results.
Okay.
Now on the spiritual platform, good result means pleasing Krishna.
Uh-huh.
On the material platform, it means getting the facility that pleases yourself.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? So the feminine is going to work in either of these two spheres.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, therefore, the counter for that is the masculine principle.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Because then the feminine nature can be engaged in devotional service and it's nicely situated, but if it starts to engage in the material, then there's the masculine element to bring in intelligence, but that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
So because it's not something that should be done from that platform, then it's not to be done. Because it doesn't give the good results.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it means, in other words, one has to appreciate the culture and understand the philosophy to know what this means. Otherwise, to use these on the pranamoy platform,
mm-hmm.
which is actually atheistic, you know,
mm-hmm.
because the point is Shastra said it, so a matter of so how to apply this.
Mm-hmm.
Because all these things have been said, so how does that all mix together? And it's not going to be cut and dry like the men would like it to be. It's going to be complicated because you're dealing with the feminine nature. Right? It has to be. Right? Otherwise, what's the point?
Right.
Is that what you
said? Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the...
Okay, thank you.
Is that okay?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, so all these are all the entourage of the Lord in the material pastimes. Alright, so therefore you're dealing with the Brahman and Paramatma aspects. But the Bhagavan, that's what's in the spiritual world. So that's a whole, the same thing, but in their original form, not their expansions.
Right?
Yes.
Brahma enumerates only the most prominent of the Leela avatars, because there are many lesser known pastime avatars of Vishnu, more than could ever be listed. Right? As Sri Sutta Goswami states, O Brahmanas, the incarnations of the Lord are innumerable, like rivulets flowing from inexhaustible sources of water. Srimad Bhagavatam 1336. Like I mentioned in the Nisringa Purana, it tells the incarnation of the Lord as a mosquito. But the whole pastime, it takes up one paragraph. He appears, the demigods appear as bees, he situates himself, I'm not sure where, either in the space or on a leaf. All the demigods as bees buzz around in a circle to circumambulate, and after doing that for some time, then the Lord leaves, and the demigods go back to their position. And that's the whole pastime.
Nice little pastime. That was in the Singapura?
And in Singapura. Sri Krishna is Sattva Nidhi, the original source of all Sattva, which Srila Sanatana Goswami defines here as compassion. The Lord expresses his compassion by descending to the material world in numerous forms, which are all secondary rivulets flowing from him, their inexhaustible source. Right? Inexhaustible sources of water. So in other words, there's something. So where is that source? That's Krishna. Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva are incarnations of the personality of Godhead for ruling the modes of nature. The three lords are not mere material opulences. But because Brahma and Shiva take the role of devotees, and work as preachers of Krishna consciousness, they are sometimes counted amongst Krishna's vibhutis. Lord Vishnu appears from time to time as the companion of Brahma and Shiva, and therefore he is also sometimes described as a material vibhuti of the Supreme. For example, Lord Vishnu incarnates in each manvantara in his forms of yajna and so on. Strictly speaking, yajna and other manvantara avatars are pastime incarnations, but they are also considered vibhutis because they collaborate with Brahma and Shiva to uphold the reins of the various manus, because they sometimes accept the post of Indra. Right? So the manvantara avatar, if there's no proper Indra, then they will take the post of Indra themselves, right? And then can do the protection themselves because they are who they are, right? So. 10. When Brahma and other demigods responded to the lamenting Mother Earth, together they all stood on the shore of the milk ocean, observing strict vows. They recited prayers and worshipped the Supreme Lord, meditating with full concentration. Nonetheless, they were unable to obtain his favor. Right, so even though they all went to the milk ocean, they're meditating on the Lord, they're offering their prayers, still they were unable to gain his darshan. Right? But the point being is the Pandavas, he comes to them. They don't have to go out. He comes to them. The Pandavas enjoyed intimate association with the Lord, an intimacy the demigods could only dream of. In this experience, according to recorded in the chapter 1 of the 10th canto, the demigods learned that mechanical meditation is not an effective means for achieving personal association with the Supreme Lord. At the end of Dwapara Yuga, to relieve Mother Earth of her distress, the demigods accepted severe vows, restricting their eating and even their breathing to sharpen their mental concentration. Right? Because when you don't breathe, that's when the mind is focused. When the air is moving either in or out, it's disturbed. Right? But when it stops, that's when it's focused. Right? So therefore, yeah, until you figure out there's no air.
Yeah. I think it's very disturbed.
They then approach the shore of the milk ocean, which surrounds the island on which Lord Kiradaksha Vishnu resides. They recited the Purusha Shukta and other Vedic prayers for his pleasure and tried to fix their external and internal senses on him. But after all this, they obtained no sign of his satisfaction, not a single word or gesture to reassure them. Yeah, because, see, now also they're approaching the technical from the position. One is just as management, but they're managing on behalf of the Lord. But there's also that attachment to their management. So therefore, it's not necessarily going to get his attention. Right? Like that. So it's only when there's that devotional aspect, then it will happen.
And it's very prominent. The devotional aspect is very prominent.
Yeah, very prominent. Even if it's momentary, but it's prominence is what.
But the demigods are devotees.
Yes, they're devotees. So that's why using the term demigod and neophyte devotee is the same thing. like that. So it's not a different thing. So even if you're thinking the neophyte devotee is a write-off, but the point is they're you know considered on the same platform as the demigods, because he may not have the same powers and skills, but they have the same level of devotion. Right? So therefore, they're considered equal, yes.
You would say it's mechanical, more or less?
It has the tendency to be mechanical. But because of association and practice, there are moments when it's not. That's why one advances. So as those moments that are not accumulate, then naturally one progresses very nicely. Otherwise, if the position is so inferior, how using that position one advances to the Madhyama platform? So therefore, it is a viable platform. It's just the beginning stage. That's all. So it's not recommended one thinks it's enough, because then one will stay there. One understands it's not enough, but this is what I have to work with.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai.
Samudhi Thalabhaktivinoda ki
jai.
Jai Nitai.